I really liked Beast of War. It's a really economically made film. And I was wondering how you decided to make a quintessentially Australian film, effectively.
Yeah, well, thank you for saying that, Annie. Yeah, it's funny. My wife hates horror. It's funny to be married to somebody who hates horror and be a horror filmmaker, but she watched it and turned to me and said, "I love it. It's your best yet." And so I don't know what I've done, but I seem to have made a semi-violent shark film that even my wife, who loves Downton Abbey, can watch. So that's nice. The last film I made was a film called Sting, which, sort of had American accents. I made a very American film in Australia, and this time I just wanted to tell an Australian story. I'm sort of known for that a little bit. My first few films were pretty quintessentially Australian, and I wanted to go back to that. But yeah, when I read about the true story of the Armidale, an Australian warship that went down in 1942, I just couldn't believe the story, the bravery that these guys went through, and I knew I couldn't base my idea on that. I very loosely was inspired by, because to tell that story would have been disrespectful. To tell it in the way that I was intending to tell it, which was to turn it into a semi quite serious adventure piece, but I really wanted to be able to underline the adventure, as was, Spielberg's intent with the original Jaws. And so yeah, I mean, it's a quintessentially Australian story. That is true, and so I guess that's just how it came out,
Yeah, well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because a whole lot of films from, say, the 40s and 50s, and even cruising to the 60s, plays in the minds of war dramas, effectively. And
Yes.
all of the characters are male. And in a way, what you've done is actually do the same thing, but it's a much more modern take, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and also just the way it was made too. I mean, it's very hyper stylized, the latest in lighting and cinematographic technology. And we had these giant volume screens that we'd wheel in front of this huge tank of water. And so we had, we were filming it through a modern lens, but at the same time, I kind of wanted to approach it aesthetically, like those old 50s war movies. And I wanted every now and again, to get that same feeling of watching, one of those old 60s war movies like The Dirty Dozen or Wild Geese or whatever, but more importantly, Bridge Over the River Kwai, David Lean, big influence on me, and just on the tone. I wanted it to feel fun, and it is a boy's own adventure. That, like, there weren't any female soldiers trapped on that raft, and I just wanted to sort of stay true to that. And we've got a couple of nurses in there. I wanted to make sure those scenes were good, so that we could semi show the fact that a lot of Australian women served in like really important capacities. But yeah, it's a boys' movie, and I really sort of leant into that aesthetically, I think.
But you do something else. So, I mean, one of the things I was really, because I'm with your wife, I do watch, I watch a lot of films and I've watched a lot of horror. And a lot of horror isn't actually horror these days, it seems to me. They're not horrible enough, if you know what I mean, unnerving enough.
Right.
However, this is unnerving. The point I'm making is that I was watching the film and I thought, oh my goodness, the way it's been crafted is so interesting because it's so quick. You're a deft filmmaker, that's my point. And
Oh, a fast game's a good game, Annie. I hate that there's horror films out there that are like 3 hours and 40 minutes long. It's like, come on. If your movie is literally hurting my spinal column, you might need an editor,
I'm a
My
little bit.
film's under 90 minutes. It's like 87 minutes, and it doesn't need to be any more than that,
And
Annie.
it's beautiful. And you, but you do a couple of things, like the thing about the Timor Sea and the space that Second World War drama has in the psyche of the Australian consciousness. But you also do that with a whole range of other things, like you did with references to the Second World War films coming out of England and America. But you also even go back to that fantastic painting of the people on the boat, you know, the French painting with the people dying. I can't remember what it's called.
I wish I could remember too, but yeah.
You know what I'm talking about, don't you? Where they actually die or die.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost like a biblical kind of thing where people are sort of out there trapped on this floating piece of wood. And
yeah.
And from that painting, you get the idea that they're being tested by God. You know what I mean? Yeah, and it's like, I really wanted to get that sort of across in this film so that, you know, we start off almost in realism in the jungles of Darwin, where they're being trained. And then when they're put on this warship and like sent out into the ocean, you know, they're traveling through a fog bank and they get sunk by Japanese Zeros. And, you know, they sort of have to swim up out of the bowels of this sinking ship into a horrifically sort of fire lit hellscape. And I wanted to seal them in that fog bank in the same way that those people were sealed in that painting within that frame. And so, you know, the fog bank never lifts, but, you know, we change colours. We go from fiery blacks to deep blues to gorgeous blood red sunrises and sunsets.
Oh, fantastic.
And then the lights up with bioluminescence under the water. So you've got these weird sort of steampunk science fiction neon greens. And I wanted it to feel like these men were being tested by a dark god. And, you know, the shark represents, you know, everything bad that they're going to have to go through in war. And they have to sort of defeat, you know, the monster shark inside themselves before they can get through to the end. And, you know, that's what, I mean, it sounds quite pretentious, but you've got to kind of talk about that stuff when you're making a film like this, and also make sure that the shark's fun and there's lots of explosions and fights and, you know, you're taking care of the adventure. But, you know, yeah, we were working on a few levels here.
Tell me about the actors and also the writing, because to me they seem to be intrinsic to each other. Like the Mark Cole Smith character, he's incredibly brave. You create this incredibly brave person, and it brings in a whole lot of the issues, modern issues, and they were present then, but we're now actually owning up to them, of deep racism.
Well, yeah, I wrote this for Mark and just crossed my fingers and hoped that he said yes.
Oh.
I wanted to work with him for years. I think he's one of our great actors.
Me too.
He's got a star quality that is not unlike somebody like Robert Mitchum, where, you know, you just can't take your eyes off him. And, you know, he's just this big, incredibly – he's just got an integrity. And he can do all his own stunts, and he's like stupidly good looking, and he can write. You know, he really helped me write this. He and Wayne Blair came on as sort of Indigenous consultants and helped me through, you know, all the cultural aspects of this. And Mark added a lot of lines that that I didn't think up myself. He's got this great line where he says, you know, it's okay to be afraid. Fear can keep you alive, but it can also get you killed. And he wrote that. And I'm like, where'd you get that? He's like, I don't know. But, yeah, we put it in the script. And, I mean, his performance, we hang the film on his performance. And the idea that, you know, these Indigenous soldiers were paid like a third of what
I know, that was shocking.
Yeah, it's disgusting. Like, not half, a third.
Third. Yeah, they were so precise.
And it's not like they're giving a third of their lives. Like,
no.
So, yeah, I just wanted to highlight that a bit. And, you know, I wanted this character to have a deep integrity and a heroism. He's the leader, you know. He starts off and there's a lot of inherent racism, you know, in that unit. And then as soon as they pop up on the raft, it's like, oh, no, he's the natural leader. Like, skin colour disappears immediately once you're faced with life and death and you realise that, you know, a person of colour is the person who's probably going to get you out of here alive. And all of his flaws are internal. Mark's actual grandfather... or great-grandfather, was a pearl diver over in Broome.
Oh, yeah.
And so his family's always had a very deep connection to the ocean. And so his character's younger brother, pearl dives maybe before he's ready and gets taken by a shark. And so Mark's character's carrying a lot of guilt about that. And he thinks, well, maybe if I can just help this other young bloke survive, you know, this shark, maybe I can get rid of some of the guilt of my own brother dying.
Yeah, yeah, so it's the thing about the hungry ghost.
Well, yeah, and it's like a Grecian myth almost, you know. These are big themes we're dealing with. And, again, you know, if you can make a silly action film but also make it with respect and, you know, with an eye towards, you know, cultural themes, mythological themes, you know, sort of interesting aesthetic concepts, then you, that's how you elevate the horror film, you know.
I actually did really enjoy this film, I have to say. And it's, I mean, I doff my hat to your expertise. Beautiful piece of work. And also...
Thank you for saying that, Annie. It really does mean a lot. You know, these things are very hard to make, and sometimes you misfire and sometimes you get it right. You know, it's just lovely to hear that.
Yeah. And but of course, he's Mark Colesmith is actually supported by a great crew of other actors, and they are perfectly paced and balanced in relation to the key story. And so Sam Derlich as the baddie, you know, in a sense, you go out of your way to give people a backstory that explains their deep and bitter soul, which then is able to be redeemed. I mean, I find that really compelling, because there's a lot of ideological push towards rubbish people. Just throw them away. They're bad. They're no good.
So critic the other day was saying that they felt that character should have been killed immediately. And I was really disappointed, because I'm like, oh, you missed the point. Like, the whole point of this film is that this guy comes across as a horrible racist bully. And in the end, you find out actually he's just a scared little kid from trauma who was, you know, really mistreated by his father, who had post-traumatic stress in World War One, and he ends up kind of loving this man of colour. And if you kill him up front, you don't get that in the end. Like, he has to go through hell with this indigenous man to realize that, you know, the error of his ways, you know. But if you kill him up front, nobody learns anything. I think there's a difference between a racist film and a film with a racist in it. You know, the racist is the antagonist. And if you kill the antagonist up front, all you got is a shark.
Yeah.
And it's like, you can't tell a shark story with just the shark as the antagonist. You have to have human antagonists. You have to have something else driving character conflict. And so that's, Des is very important. And Sam Derlich played it beautifully.
He really did. And out of that too was a story that is a working class story of the trauma that the First World War actually had on all those families of returned service people.
Yeah, and that was important to me. My grandfather died in World War II, was shot in the Pacific, and the trauma of that was with my mum for her whole life, and a bunch of things happened to her because she grew up without a dad, and, you know, that trauma affects everybody in the family. There was a lot of waste, and the idea that in World War One and World War Two we were sending 17-year-old boys to war, you know, and that was very important to me to cast both Joel Nankervis and Lee Tiger Halley, because they both look 17. They've both got beautiful, fresh faces. They're both just gun actors, and they needed to represent that part of Australia where some of the best and brightest and most beautiful young people we had were just snuffed out, you know, for what? It was, you know, it's a huge waste of humanity.
Yeah, and you're right. They were great foils to and supports to the main character, and they are really good actors, aren't they?
Half of this is casting. Like, if you don't cast really, really good actors, you end up with a B-movie, and nobody wants that, you know. It's, if you believe in and care about the characters before they start getting attacked by a big toothy monster, then, yeah, it's just a silly B-movie to a popcorn film, you know. This was Joel's first big feature film. Lee was pretty easy to cast because we just went, oh, yeah, him, let's get him immediately. Joel was difficult because we needed him to look 17, but also have kind of a nerdy old school 1940s character, and he needed to start off as scared and end up as a bit of a hero. So that's a big arc for a young actor to play. They both fit in really beautifully to what we needed them to do, you know.
Yeah, and that's not even talking about all the others. All really great. It opens on Thursday the 9th, tonight. Have you had any responses from people in general?
It's probably the best reviewed film of my career, which I didn't expect. I mean, we all tried really hard on this one, and we all had a huge, deep respect for the for what we were doing. And really, I just think all the heads of department, from DOPs to costume to production design, to acting, everybody was just operating at an A level. But to me, I was just like, yeah, let's have a crack at a shark film, you know, and like to have the reviews coming in, and so it's like 4- and 5-star reviews. It's crazy. It's been really beautifully validating for the whole project. And I just hope people come to the cinemas on Thursday, because it's a distinctly Australian story. like, I think in a way it is a beautiful story, even though it is a shark film. So you can, if you're coming for action and gunfire, you'll get that. But if you're looking for something a little bit more poetic and a beautiful sort of treatise on World War II and what Australians went through, you're going to get that too.
And you're going to get a white pointer. I mean, what else could you ask for?
Well, yeah, and it's a real practical effect. You know, we built like a half-ton shark that, like, you know, floats through the water. Yeah, but and also all these digital shark movies that are coming out, I just, you know, it's good effects and stuff, but I don't really believe they're real. I think CGI still has a problem with showing weight correctly, and the interaction with like water displacement is always a little bit skew if.
Yep.
But if you've got like a half ton thing, like, you know, exploding up out of the water, just snapping its kind of jaws at the actors and interacting with the actors, like, it just, it's real. It's like a real object. And I think part of horror is to texturally convince people that it's happening. And it's hard to do that when you've just got CG sharks jumping around everywhere, you know?
Well, it's scary. Okay. Thank you very much for spending some time with me.
Thanks so much, Annie. I really appreciate it.